Daniel, how's it going? Hopefully your phone is working this time. Oh, there we go. Daniel's on his fake account. I love it. Can you hear me, Daniel? I think I hear your keyboard typing away, so I assume it's...
You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me? Dude, I love that your fake Twitter profile is you with a fake mustache.
Yeah, it's somebody must have sent that to me before, like in the distant past.
So what's happened? Your main account doesn't work, so you have to use your...
No, what doesn't work is Brave. Like, maybe I can upgrade it, but the browser doesn't work with X right now. So I had to switch to Chrome, and then in a rush, Google was trying to make me do two-factor authentication for my other account. So I just skipped that and used the Gelato account. So I needed to... I rushed back. I was on a bike ride. In the rain, you know, I've been cooped up inside in New York. It's been really dismal, just gray and wet. And, you know, I've been just sitting for the last 3 days. So I forced myself somehow, I'm proud of myself, to go out there, and I'm just completely trashed. I have like water all over me. And then I remembered about the Twitter space here. It's too hard to say X space. So, you know, I'm going to say Twitter space. So I rushed back and I'm still sitting in my helmet and I'm like covered in grunge. So,
it's funny, when I saw in Discord that you're going for your bike ride at like 4 something, like, there's no way this guy's gonna be back by 5 o'clock. I'm glad I pushed your space out, but happy you made it.
There's like a shock went through my heart when I realized, oh shit, I have to get back. But I'm glad I made it back. Yeah, so what's going on, Risby?
You know what's fun? Before we dive into that, when you're calling it an X space, I don't know if you ever watched like WWE like wrestling back in the day. But there was a guy called the X Factor or something. I forgot what his name was. But he would always do this move like suck it, where he'd make an X around his cock and go like that. And I remember one time my mom caught me doing it and she beat the shit out of me. She's like, you can't do that. Disrespectful. So whenever people say X anything, I always like think about that.
That's unfortunate. I think of, you know, exploration and these loftier things. But that's what balances out.
I almost thought that Tri can't join us today. I think there's a Jewish holiday or something, so he's not allowed to be near technology, but I'll try to like channel my inner Try to make sure that if we get too off topic, we'll sort of bring it back.
Well, it's good to be back online, you know, after going to Colorado for a week and getting back and, you know, having a lot on our plate to kind of wrap up. How have you been holding up?
I've been doing pretty good. It's kind of nice to see everything moving along. My daughter, you know, she's only like, what, 2 months now? Mm-hmm. But when we had the first one, she was so much easier. Like, you would feed her. She would sleep for 8 hours. Nothing. This one is total opposite. She loves being held. Yeah. Like, every 2-3 hours, you know. Apparently, my family produces large babies that are hungry. So, she's always eating and stuff. So, it's been interesting. I've been getting, like, 3 hours of sleep. So, like, in the middle of the day, I'll take a quick nap and go to bed at, like, 4 a.m. Even though all of this is happening, I still find myself saying, I fucking love being a dad, man. It's almost like training little computers, and I just can't wait to see like what they're going to be. Like, Emma is almost 3 years old now. She's running around, you know, choking me and stuff. It's like, it's fun.
I mean, sounds like I would need more sleep. You know, I would just be completely loony, I think. Or maybe it would super focus me, you know, in some realm that I'm not even aware of.
You know what's funny? This kind of reminds me of like maybe a few years ago before like I started working for, you know, Zillow and stuff like that, where I would like stay up all night working, experimenting, doing stuff like, you know, sleeping off or living off a few hours of sleep. It kind of feels like I'm back to that. And I don't know, I feel like my body's ready for me. Like, I don't need too much sleep. Give me a couple of hours. I'm good to go. Just some periodic naps.
Yeah. I mean,
I hope you don't miss Colorado too much. I know, like, you know, I'm glad you got away. And since you've been back, we've been trying to get back to, you know, a proper cadence of doing these weekly spaces. But, man, I fucking miss Colorado. Been there a few times, you know, with you especially. And I just imagine all this rain there, us hanging out, smoking a joint or something. Just too beautiful.
Yeah, it was, you know, I'm always thinking, oh, maybe here's a good place for a future, you know, office. In my mind, you know, and I've always been, you know, the last 10 years or so, just always thinking how nice it would be to have, like, you know, an office, but it was like a, you know, slash co-working space slash, you know, a place that people come hang out and, you know, you can have parties there, you can get serious work done. Just something that wasn't like strictly classifiable as one type of space. And, you know, to share that with people. And, you know, for a while I was thinking of having some kind of warehouse in Brooklyn, but, you know, and because that wide open space that's reconfigurable, but, you know, anything would do, a little cabin even at this point. But
I definitely love the idea of us definitely having a warehouse, like a co-op space for just Web3 related. You know, we'll have a section for gelato, but basically anyone can come and sort of come and hang out and do stuff. Because when you just have this hub of like random developers, especially working within space and come hang out, like who knows the amount of crazy shit that could potentially come from that interaction. So, I mean, hopefully next year, like right now we're doing a lot of building, we're growing, generating revenue. In a year or two, definitely would love to maybe, you know, link up with another big project and buy out a space out there, you know, just make it a Cosmos slash Web3 hub for us to do cool stuff. And, you know, if like, I know there's a bunch of, you know, like nomadic coders as well, too, they just move from place to place. Maybe this would be a great place for them to take like a pit stop, hang out for a bit, and then sort of move on.
Like an Airbnb within it.
Yeah. I definitely love the idea of Colorado, too. I remember when we first went to Boulder, I was like, bro, I want to live out here. So at some point, I do want to live out there, but having some type of like compound, a gelato compound, you need an NFT or something to get in. The world is ending. Just having that environment. Colorado, I feel like it would be a great place.
Yeah, I mean, gelato plus whatever projects, you know, might be aligned or federated with it. You know, I always kind of romanticize the, you know, monasteries, seeing them as some kind of antiquated form of like coders, you know, the scribes, and they're sitting there, you know, writing the source code, you know, back in the day over and over. And I feel like it'd be cool to have something similar where we have, you know, some kind of collective or something, like a coder collective, you know, somehow make that work and tie it in with vegetable farming and other things that are like more practical for survival. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. I'm happy to be back. And, you know, we should do a gelato trip sometime. And go to Colorado, you know, and have people. We always fantasize about that.
Well, we went there last year, so hopefully this year when we take our yearly 420 trip, maybe Costa Rica or somewhere. Like, I want to go somewhere with jungle, but water as well, too. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, you want to?
I guess we should sort of dive into it. I was hoping, you know, maybe we could start with Sports Square first, because you're pretty much at the finish line. I shared some screenshots earlier of the admin tool. So, like, all the smart contract work is done. The admin tool is just about built, which is going to make it easier for people to, you know, to manage the game, interact with it. And maybe tell us, you know, what else is going on with
that. So, you know, I mean, there's so much going on. It's, you know, it's hard to know where to start talking about anything. So I'm kind of, like, double-guessing myself here. So, you know, I'll need your help in staying on point. So with Footsquare, you know, it's, we did it before through a lot of kind of manual labor, you know, like I did a bunch of magical things behind the scene to create the games and to kind of administer them as they're going on. And so, you know, and a lot of that was hard through code, the contracts were created. So we want to make this more of a scalable process. We have some, exemplary members in the community who stepped up and they want to oversee Football Squares going forward for maybe, you know, two or three games a week and maybe even for other sports. And, you know, so I've been putting together a tool for them to use to kind of, you know, to line up the new games and to oversee them, you know, to handle disputes or whatever may occur. So that's kind of the background for those screenshots that you're talking about. Once that's there, you know, it's I have the like you said, the smart contract. Each Football Squares game is represented by its own smart contract. So you know, they'll have the power to go and create their own instances. And at first, you know, it'll be just, we'll have a global football squares board for each, you know, game going on. But it opens up the door, you know, clearly the next step would be to kind of release this tool to the general public in case people out there just want to use it amongst themselves. So it's cool to be, you know.
And I really like that idea, just because I know we're focusing on like the big football games throughout the season, but having this tool out there is going to allow people to do it for college football, right? Maybe a lesser known game. You also want to open this up to other, you know, sports in the future, like, you know, NBA, maybe MLB or something. So definitely having it out there where people can make their own version, play it with their friends, open it up publicly. You know, maybe they get a percentage of the cut if they create the board and also promote it as well.
They can even on a smaller scale, just like use it if they want to, you know, on a game, like an intramural game or something that they're playing themselves, you know?
Yep.
And, you know.
And the beautiful part of that is, you know, it feels like as people are using it, all the revenue that's being generated is still going back to our house, our stakers. So it's really nice just putting it in people's hands. You know, we're going to obviously battle test it, use it. But definitely can't wait for us to make more admin tools available for even other products that we have and future ones.
And, you know, in the process of doing the work here to get this going again, you know, we've had to make some changes to just make it more fail-safe. You know, there are some things that were a bit too delicate about the way we did it last time, so we were fixing those. And, you know, another side effect of this work was while I was in Colorado, mostly and like a few days before that, I was working on like a V2 of another smart contract that's kind of used internally as the brains of the operation. It keeps track of all the individual smart contracts out there in different groups, like all the football squares contracts. You know, since they're all individual, they have to be, there's nothing built into the blockchain to keep track of them all. This is so, you know, we have this custom mechanism that allows us to keep track of them and to sort them and to provide them to the user interface when it tries to display them. So that's a nice side effect because, you know, every other thing that we use that creates multiple instances of smart contracts, you know, user profile contracts, deal contracts in a hypothetical peer-to-peer, you know, commerce app, it'll be used there to keep track of all the deals, to keep track of all the profiles. And so it has massive general utility. And the cool thing about it is that it allows us to keep all of the application data, you know, on chain without having to go through some kind of finicky and, you know, complex process of keeping a backend server and database architecture synced up with the blockchain, which is just a can of worms. And to the extent we can avoid it, I feel like we should, because not only is it awesome just to have everything on chain, but it also you know, cuts down our operational expenses and it allows the data still to be kind of decentralized in the sense that now if our database just goes down or whatever, you know, happens in the future, you know, it won't matter because someone can come along and they can equally build a front end for it and get access to all the data, be able to query all the collections of the other contracts and so on.
I know this is definitely some time away before it actually happens, but I'm definitely looking forward to the day where we can actually open source our front end and maybe even build it into a nice, easy package that anyone can run it. I sort of envision a place where, hey, maybe Gelato is going to block off certain parts of the world and, you know, areas where we don't have legal jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. But if someone wants to take our front end and deploy it there and everything's on chain, then that definitely makes it a lot more scalable, you know, in my opinion. So definitely happy we're going with this approach of putting everything on chain, just so there isn't a single point of failure for us.
And I don't mean that we'll do everything on chain and be like, you know, you also oftentimes critique the so-called purists who want just to do everything through, you know, the, you know, I guess smart contracts and IPC and so on. I you know, we are still going to use traditional, you know, web dev and full stack development to, you know, do whatever we needed to do, you know, but to the extent that we can keep the core, you know, the core on the chain, I think that would be great. Everything else is kind of things like periodic tasks or sending out notifications or things that are kind of tangential to the actual application. You know, when I'm probably going to launch into this later, but once we start releasing things, you know, we have an application lined up on Archway that's going to leverage this this contract for keeping track of everything. And I'm not going to mention it by name because maybe you are. I don't know. I kind of want to talk about it.
Honestly, I sometimes wish like we had a lot more bandwidth so we can focus on the educational part of what we do. Because what you're describing, like I'm in the Archway Builder chat. I'm in other Builder chats. And I hear people sort of always talking about things like this. How do I keep all this stuff on chain? Or how do I do this the best way? Even though we have the code available out there, I kind of wish we had time to write better documentation, maybe record a presentation or something like that, better explaining how it's going. And I'm sure we will eventually, but definitely can't wait for us to have the bandwidth to do stuff like this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if we could just whip together like a demo that shows like a table format for each one of these contracts that keeps track of other contracts, I'm calling it like a database table contract. So it's like a spreadsheet or something, you know, it's a table and you can look things up in it. So, you know, we can build a user interface that looks like you're looking at tables in a database and, you know, similarly, right? And that oftentimes you'll find people using that sort of thing to administer an application, you know, when you're trying to suspend a user or to enable a feature flag on something in the application for a certain user or whatever it may be, or you're, you know, it's behind the scenes stuff, but it's oftentimes kind of crucial and just some kind of technology that's taken for granted in Web 2, you know, from a business standpoint, you know, the internal operation standpoint. So if we could make something that is useful and very similar to what people are already used to in Web 2 when it comes to actually managing a business and like an online, like a online service or product, I think it would just be huge. You know, it's not sexy because it's not some like end user application with some, you know, great promises for this or that. You know, it's some kind of like back end enterprisey type of thing. But I think that because it's not sexy, it's kind of been, this kind of thing's been a bit neglected for Web3.
As you talk about this, it has at least got me thinking, like in traditional Web2, if you go to like Amazon, Heroku or whatever, even DigitalOcean, you can say create a database, pick whatever database you want, the version, and you basically pay a monthly fee and they take care of everything for you. So even though like, you know, our code is fully open source, I almost envision a front end where like, hey, if you want to spin up your own Web3 database, you know, put in information, do this and that, and boom, now you've basically deployed this contract / database for people to use. The APIs are fully documented. Right. And, you know, we could charge a fee where that fee to spin up this database goes back to staking of the house or something, you know, like that.
I think, you know, it's like I've been thinking about this, about, you know, open source and making money from smart contracts. Since they are open source and anyone, and even if they aren't, there are ways of basically, you know, people could find ways of copying and, you know, deploying the contracts themselves in such a way that they kind of, you know, circumvent whatever you did to earn from them. You know, like if we had, you know, baked in a fee, if we sold something in the smart contract, someone could find the smart contract and they could change that so that it didn't do the, you know, didn't send the tokens to us, right?
So this is what I found, right? In a lot of cases, I feel like most people, and this is me being a lazy person, most people just pay for the convenience. Right. You make it cheap enough, easy enough, you do it, they'll pay for it. Will you get a handful of people who'll look at the code, deploy it, be able to change it? Sure, they can do that. But I feel like the majority of people are going to be, hey, if this thing works, I'll pay you something to make my life
easier. Exactly. I think so. That's what I was trying to get at in a long way. You know, just the creating a user interface for it, a friendly user interface, right? Like we can, because kind of that's what, if we focus on charging, you can go and create, you know, instances of this contract yourself. But if you want to have them recognized by the front end here, you have to do it through us, right? So then we're giving them something. Not only are we like giving the open source to the world, you know, if they want to just go create their own instances, they don't care about our UI. But at the same time, we're giving them the UI, and we've created a way of honestly, you know, earning something for that work that's not just dependent, you know, so we don't have to go and try to hide and obfuscate the source code for the smart contract. You know what I mean? I think the UI on the front end is like,
I guess just bring us back a bit, because I definitely do want to get into prediction market for Archway. I guess one last thing I wanted to say about the admin creator tool for SportSquare. One of like the initial requirements we had was, you know, when we build this thing out, we want this to support multi-chain. Like in the future, we envision, you know, hey, if we make a game for X and Y, we should be able to deploy to multiple chains at the same time, Juno, Archway, wherever. And when our users are inputting scores or doing any type of management, you can manage both states, you know. So I think this is going to make it more accessible. This way, if you don't want to play in GLTL, you want to play in, you know, Archway or whatever, you'll kind of now have that flexibility to do so, which I think is really cool. And I think we should definitely apply that philosophy to, like, all the admin creator tools that we build out.
To have a neat way to easily target what network it's on?
Exactly, because target which network it's on, but at the same time, if you have a game that's Team A versus Team B, mm-hmm. right, and now you're inputting scores or doing right. something to manage that contract, you should be able to apply it to both or more chains at the same time, which kind of makes it scalable, you know? This way, it's available to people on, you know, whatever chain the volume and users are going to mm-hmm. be on.
Yep.
You're just talking about a factory there, man.
Basically, I was actually curious, Dave, if you're online or not. I know you're heading home, and you know the train station doesn't always have the best reception.
Yeah, no, I made a stop, so and I can be on. Didn't want to miss it.
I kind of envisioned Dave under a little tree or something with a little umbrella, talking on the space.
Forgot the umbrella part.
Yeah, I was biking in the rain and I couldn't see anything after a while because the glasses were fucking up and little, you know, raindrops on the glasses. I need to get some serious, like, you know, glasses that are meant to be.
We got to get you, like, aviator yeah. goggles or some shit, exactly. you know?
I have some. Yeah, so, go on.
I was curious if there was anything else you wanted to add or share about Foursquare as we wrap it up. And then maybe we could dive into the prediction market on Archway.
No, I mean, I can just say, though, that, you know, I'm trying to wrap up the work as fast as I can, and it's coming along well. I just have to finish it up. I mean, it's just, yeah, you know, I'm just turning the crank at this point, so it's going to be done as soon as possible, and then, you know, we'll move on to what you're about to say.
Yeah, I think I'm also happy that we're taking our time to make it more scalable and easy to use for future sports, because when we did it the first time, during the last Super, NFL season, we kind of did it in a rush. We kind of wanted to just mostly experiment. And, you know, yes, we could have tried to just bring that online, but it was, like, so messy. So I definitely think this approach is better. And once it's out there, we can use it for other things, which will be awesome. So I guess, you know, we talked enough about Foursquare. Daniel, do you want to sort of, you know, give us an overview of the prediction market that we plan to build on Archway? And then I guess from there, we could dive into specifics, you know.
Yeah, sure. This is a big one. So,
I know I just opened like a big can of worms. Like, yeah, tell us, you know, E equals MC squared. Not kidding.
Well,
you have to take a deep breath first.
Well, we okay. So, I guess long story short is that Archway has given us, you know, the green light to proceed with building a innovative type of prediction market on Archway. So. That's really cool, and I'm really excited to be doing that because we've been discussing this for a long time and have a lot of ideas, you know, stewing by us and by other core members. And, you know, it's an area that's ripe for experimentation and innovation and creativity, and that's kind of like what I live for when it comes to, you know, comes to this stuff. So, you know, I guess it actually, you know,
Daniel, I'm going to pretend like I know nothing about this. So at the very beginning, you know, there's definitely a lot to cover when it comes to building a prediction market. Could you just cover what is a prediction market and how it's traditionally used? Because I feel like most people sort of cover that. Then we could dive into like the what's going to power
it. So basically, prediction markets are markets in which you're trading shares in possible outcomes of real world events. Or just any kind of event in this case. So what that means is that you have people who are making bets for or against, you know, say a certain candidate in a political election, or making bets on, you know, what the inflation rate will be in 6 months, or whether somebody will, you know, I mean, just whatever you can think of, it can be. And So each one of those would be considered, like, I guess technically its own prediction market. So you will, you know, you can, there are other predictions out there, prediction markets out there that you can look at, maybe give you some idea of what we're talking about. But that's the general idea, is kind of betting on beliefs and events, right? And so existing prediction markets have, like, the one that has gotten, like, notoriety in the last few years is Polymarket. If you look there, you know, they'll have an election, and within the elections, they'll have candidates. And the idea is that you buy shares of yes or shares of no. It's called a binary market in that sense. And, you know, so they have this kind of market structure set up for all sorts of different events. And so what we have in mind is very similar to this, except that it's going to be what we've been making a lot of sketches recently and discussing a lot in the user experience theory of it and how to make it intuitive. If you go to polymarket.com or Polymarket rather, I don't know if it's .com or .whatever, but if you go there and you don't know what it is already, it's very confusing, I think. You know, you try to, you might understand the idea of what a prediction market is in the sense of it says, oh, bet on anything. But when you actually go into the application and try to use it, it's not clear why it is the way it is. You know, when you can apparently sell shares, for example, in something, and you don't already own shares. So how can you sell shares in something you don't already own? It's not intuitive. There's some mapping to traditional, you know, financial markets, but I don't think that, you know, I think that market, that metaphor is there mainly because it's trying to be cool, maybe.
I mean, I definitely got to say, you know, a few weeks ago when we started doing, you know, further research at the different prediction markets, what works, what doesn't work, I definitely have to say it wasn't very intuitive. It was kind of confusing using Polymarket, you know, how the shares work. You know, eventually, once you dig deep enough, you can kind of figure it out. But one of my biggest fear is maybe a lot of people won't do that. Maybe a lot of people will just look at it at the surface and not want to go deep enough. So Polymarket idea is definitely great, but how are we going to make it easier to, like, the end user?
Well, I mean, I don't want to give away too much, like try to cram like a bunch of things that are be better visualized into some, you know, malformed words. But the general idea is, you know, we've been making sketches, and we can share some of the sketches. They're really early on right now, but trying to come up with like semantics and the whole user experience to make it just way more intuitive, so that when someone goes there and they see the proposition that you can bet on, you know, events or future events or something, when they actually go to do it, it's very, they don't have to think about how to use it. It's just like a very clear, direct experience. So, you know, that's, I guess that's what, but, you know, zooming out, you know, that's the prediction market, but that's not the only thing that is going to be built. That's just kind of like the first application of, that's just like one part of it. And there's a second part of it, which is more of another, you can think of it as another like application, really. It's kind of, it's a protocol for resolving the outcomes of these events that are being bet upon in the prediction market. And I guess, you know, we've been throwing around different like nomenclature for what this thing is. You know, Grisby has been calling it kind of cleverly a human validation service, or human validators, human oracles. But it's a way of like third parties to reliably and in a trustworthy, let me avoid using the word trust, just in a reliable fashion to bring off chain, you know, data on chain, to supply and agree upon the outcomes of events. And I know when you first hear that, it's like, oh, people, like, what are we going to do? You know, people are going to, you know, input like garbage or try to game the system. Well, that's the problem we're here to solve. You know, so we have like a bunch of ideas, and some ideas are already put into code regarding how to kind of set this thing up in such a way that, you know, the people who are participating have not only something financial on the line to participate, but also a reputational system that allows, you know, participation in certain votes based on some custom set preferences regarding people's levels of past responsiveness when they've participated in helping settle the outcomes of events, or how much, you know, how much experience overall they have, or how much they've voted without dispute. You know, we have a variety of different mechanisms by which they will be, like a user will be scored, and those scores will be factored into their qualification to participate as voters in various bets that need some service to kind of resolve them, to say, yes, this this is according to this, all this info, all these different sources, you know, Biden won the election, you know. So I
definitely have to say, like, the whole scoring aspect of it to me is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as we've done, you know, market research into other protocols that are doing something similar, one of the trends we tend to see is it's all based on self-stake. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to bet on games that are, or do outcomes for games that are worth X or mm-hmm. Y, you just have a certain amount of stake, which gives you a certain amount of weight to be able to vote and sort of do that. I mean, that's kind of okay, but the problem is, what if, you know, people with a lot of money come in, what if they're spread across multiple wallets, and now they can sort of game the system mm-hmm. because they have the money to do so. But right. by us taking self-stake, but also adding other characteristics, like, you know, how quickly do you respond? Do you add in your research? You know, what is your overall accuracy? Using multiple data points to be able to say, hey, this person has this much trustworthy score, and this is what their weight might look like. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, again, you know, I'm sure there'll be more data points we add as we develop this thing, but I'm kind of curious to see how that works out, because to me, I'm hoping this is going to prevent, like, spammers, new people just from coming in and trying to do a malicious thing. People who are continuously active and are participating or being good actors will be rewarded. And, you know, if you're not, you're going to be punished as well.
You know, one of the scores that I have in mind is based on basically identity, unique identity verification. And, you know, I started a conversation with a project that is, I don't think it's on Cosmos yet, called Civic Pass. And so they are a blockchain project on, you know, EVM chains that will provide multiple, like, tiers of identity verification. So that won't be strictly necessary, but that will be one dimension along which a person is scored, and users of this service will be able to kind of set a threshold to whether any is required at all, or a certain amount is required of, you know, identity verification. So, you know, it's you can think of it kind of as, we've been thinking about it as like a kind of a jury pool. And, you know, as opposed to, you know, if you look at how Polymarket works and these other prediction markets, they're the system that they have, the equivalent to, like, their version of this whole thing, you know, it doesn't, the individual doesn't have much of an identity, right? It's more anonymous, based on self-bonding. And it requires self-bonding a lot, like, you know, 750, you know, $1,000, you know, just to participate as a voter in one market. So that's not what we're going to have going on here. You know, the game theory behind it, and the score and the reputation, the scoring and the reputation, the social aspect of it, will allow us to not require such large bond amounts for the participation in voting, because it's kind of another, you know, I guess, constraint on the user, to be honest, besides just, like you're saying, the financial, you know, threat of taking their coins. So
I did want to quickly mention something about bonding, because yes, there is social score that we want to take into account, but you also have to bond a certain amount to be able to participate. Right. So one of the things that we plan to do is actually have that integrated into GLTO staking of the house. You need to have X amount of GLTO stake, let's say $250, you know, through $500, something to that degree as the house, right? This way, if you're someone who's being dishonest or doing malicious stuff, your self-stake will get, you know, slashed to a certain degree, your score will get impacted, and whenever a user's, you know, funds are slashed, it's going to go back to the stakers of the house. This way, if we are doing malicious stuff, It goes back to everyone else that's, you know, in the house. So I think by combining these things, I think it's going to be interesting dynamic to see, like, sort of what happens, because I'm sort of envisioning in the future people building companies or organizations around telling the truth. Right now, if you look across Cosmos and other, you know, Web3 ecosystems, mm-hmm. people have little companies, different infrastructure, whether it's running validators, RPCs, or whatever. And I would love to see something similar to that for truth as well, too. If you're someone who's going to be honest and going to be a good actor, then this should be a platform where you can make a good living, being honest.
And, you know, absolutely. And, you know, it's, I mean, that's the cool thing about a lot of what we're doing. You know, we've been trying to build things for the users to play and, you know, the other side, the house side as well. You know, it's part of just the general joy of building things in Web3 and trying to build businesses in Web3 is this ability to, you know, kind of build businesses in such a way that it doesn't just centralize all the profit in yourself, but it kind of elevates all like a large group of people who might want to participate in it, right? It's kind of like you can create things that are way more fair, I think, and create opportunities. So, I mean, that's one of the main driving forces I have in this area when it comes to innovating in this way.
I also wanted to mention, too, is like, you know, very often, you know, people will say, oh, Gelato is a gaming company or this or that. You know, we always turn around and say, no, Gelato is a Web3 software development company. Yes, we started with games and we'll continue to do that, but we want to branch out into other mm-hmm. things. So, like, prediction market to me is one of the first things we really branch. Prediction market and fractionalized NFTs are like the first two things that we're branching, you know, out of gaming. And we're going to be taking revenue created by both those products and bringing it back to staking of the house. And I think once people finally understand that, like, hey, by staking of the house, it's not just the games or the casino stuff that's going on. It's literally anything that we build. You know, in the future, we want to build like a P2P market, right? So as that takes off, revenue from that will also go back to the house. So literally anything that we build in the future, current and, you know, beyond, everything, all the revenue, all the, you know, rewards from it will go do staking of the house. And the benefit of that is staking of the house has a great amount of liquidity in it. So we can sort of use the liquidity from there to offer people a chance to do bigger things, get bigger reward. And in return for that, the rewards go back to staking of the house.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what can I say? It would be awesome, you know, when it really takes off, you know what I mean? It's like we've been operating with just a few things, like basically an MVP, you know, like a few things, the Lottos and the Mortal Coin Bat and these other games plugged into it, right? But those are just little things, right? Compared to a whole prediction market or you know, an NFT, like a fractional NFT market or application. It's like those things are entire, you know, worlds in and of themselves, and they have the potential to generate a lot more volume than, you know, what, you know, we've currently seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, so far we sort of primarily focused on people who love the game, who love to do degen stuff, and that's going to be a small, you know, group of people. But now if you combine something like this platform, you're right, it is kind of open up to like basically everyone.
Before we move on, though, I just wanted to say that the one of the cool things, just from my tech perspective, is that these anytime that somebody uses this service that we're talking about to kind of decide something, that you can think of that as taking the jury pool and forming a jury from it. And the jury does its deliberations and it looks at the evidence and it comes to an agreement on, you know, what's on the outcome, on it comes to a verdict, right? It comes to an agreement on what happened. And so that each one of those juries is its own autonomous smart contract, right? We're not going to have like one large monolithic smart contract that maintains all of these juries, you know, and, you know, for the rest of time, which could be problematic if there's any kind of problem with one thing that affects everything else, right? So I just like this fact that they're going to live as kind of like a receipt, in a separate, you know, individual receipt of this whole thing for each one of these events, you know, like a receipt of the decision, so to speak. So anyway, I'm just really excited to work on it for all these reasons.
I mean, beyond the prediction market and the Human Oracle, the thing that really excites the shit out of me is the Human Oracle stuff alone can be used in so many different ways. We're going to obviously start with it for the prediction market, but I can envision the future where we can sort of open it up to anyone. Anyone can request a jury pool to sort of deliberate on some real world event that's happening and use that information in some other smart contract or do something. And every time they're requesting your own jury pool, some type of fee is going to be paid, you know, whether it's USDC, GLTO, and will be sent back to our stakers of the house.
They request a jury from the jury pool. The jury pool being like the registry of all of the jurors.
Yeah, just semantics, but just the idea of being able to onboard, you know, real world information and make it accessible to other projects, protocols, whatnot. I feel like that's where it's going to be potentially a game changer. Let's say we deployed the prediction market and it's doing great, and another project wants to come along and use this information, and now they're doing great. This is awesome because now the Human Oracle protocol is also generating revenue for the house, and the prediction market is doing as well too.
And you know, part of the plan with this is to get like a basic mobile app going as well, and it won't have to face any kind of restrictions because it's a crypto app. It doesn't have to be a crypto app. The mobile app can just simply serve as like a portal for these people who are participating as jurors be notified when it comes time to vote on something that they've been watching, or a new trial, so to speak, a new problem to solve shows up. You know, something to keep like active engagement, right? Rather than what we see perhaps when there's like a governance vote on some network. It's kind of like you might see it in some Discord announcement, but you know, it's like, you know, you're not getting push notifications. And I think that's, I don't know. I mean, would maybe?
I think that's definitely going to be needed because that is definitely a big issue. So you might have important votes or things that people can, you know, be a part of, but it's not really accessible. And you know, having a mobile app is great because that's kind of what people are used to.
So with this kind of technology that we're going to build, you know, we won't only have to have like prediction markets on things that happen just once every 4 years, like a presidential election. They can be done on things that happen every day, every 2 days, you know, so it could be, you know, like kind of like what we saw with Caesar, right? Like that was the name of it, with the betting on what the price of some token is going to do in the next 10 minutes. Like it's the same principle, you know, we can find other things that happen on a different cadence, but also frequently, like, you know, every 12 hours, every day, every 12, you know, every 2 days and so on. So
one of the things that I'm really happy about is in other traditional like prediction market, it's usually the team who curates like the bets, right? They'll do the standard stuff like who's going to win a presidential election, is SBF going to get Adderall in prison or some stuff like that. But from day one, we're looking to sort of open this up to everyone. So if you want to come in, maybe you pay a small fee or something, and you want to create your own question like, hey, will this governance prop pass? Or hey, will like, you know, Rama shit himself or something like that? Now people can sort of do that. Now you can have all these different options of prediction markets that people can participate in. And, you know, based on the ones people really love, that's the stuff that's going to go to the top and the shitty ones are going to come to the bottom. And I think this makes it easier on us because now we don't have to try and figure out what the best prediction market is, right? We can sort of people power that and sort of give it out to them and see what works.
Exactly. I mean, it should be only slightly harder than making a tweet or post now, apparently. I like to create one of these. If you have an idea for something, you know, we definitely don't want just a complete, you know, we're not going to, I'm not talking about spam, right? Like we'll have some kind of sanity in the system, but the difficulty of creating something valid should be really low, you know? So that's something that.
It doesn't have to be in V1, but I definitely would love in the future if we could also even integrate. It's almost like, when I think about these jury people who are going to be in the jury, I'm almost envisioning user profiles, right? Yeah. We're looking at some checks to build the characteristics, but also being able to add stuff like your Twitter or your GitHub, and then based on the activity of those things, maybe those, you know, those additional data points can give us more information about if someone's trustworthy or not. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're someone who gets a lot of good Twitter engagement or you do a lot of, you know, development on other projects, maybe that should go into your credibility. And this is something we talked about vaguely once, but this to me is like setting the foundation of some type of social score. You know, as we sort of expand the Gelato ecosystem, we're always thinking about how do we reward good users, people who continue to come to the platform, play the games, engage with us. Having something like this, we're saying, hey, he's an honest person or he's an active person. I think that's going to open up the gate to sort of do cool things like, hey, if you're a, you know, a good user or a mediocre user, maybe we reduce your gas by X or we give you this type of discount. If you're a bad actor who's doing whatever, we could block you, make you pay more. So just do these types of things so we're rewarding the good, but also slapping the bad.
Yeah, Rizvi stole like both of my points. but yeah, that's, I don't know if you guys recall, but the whole spam list, I think that would definitely be like really needed, especially with like the jurors and stuff, because you don't want, you know, people to be able to do multiple times, like come in and be bad actors. Like,
yeah, well, you know,
gonna be huge.
You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about to discourage that at first is to only allow, you know, when somebody is new on the platform, they can participate and they can vote on things, but they can't participate any, they don't receive any incentive for their participation. Whereas somebody with some minimum level of experience and meets the minimal requirements in these scores that are set by the different, I guess, clients of the service, they do make some profit from it, right? Their scores are adjusted positively.
Yeah.
And they receive whatever the arrangement is with the contract that is using it as a client. That could be like a dynamic value that's split among the jurors, or it could be like a fixed payout, right? And so, that's a whole other thing that's going to be interesting to.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to have like different tiers, and so, you know, but, as you roll up, and
yeah, but
when we launch more and more features, because obviously, you know, once it's launched, there really won't be, you know, a lot of trustworthy jurors because the information isn't there. So like while we're beta testing, it definitely would be nice if we could open it up to our VIPs, but not just, you know, if you hold one NFT or something. If you're someone who has a lot of stake in Gelato, then maybe, you know, people, I don't know, just like Gatch, you know, Drock and stuff, that's been really part of the ecosystem and really trying to like push us to do well. Maybe we can whitelist some of, you know, additional or some users. They can help test it, build up their credential, and then eventually, once they have a good amount of users that are trustworthy, then we can sort of open it up to the public. They're like, hey, now anyone has a chance to come in and potentially participate and, you know, do things.
Or also, since we have Staken as a house, it's going to be on Arch if you have a, you know, boatload there too, right? You have a huge investment into Staken as a house on there.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Oh, I think definitely so. Like all these different things that we have, like we have access to existing information that can hopefully help us, you know, figure out who are going to be the good actors that we can bootstrap this prediction market with. So definitely we'll look at all those different criteria and try to find something that's fair and balanced.
Right. But, you know, in the long run, it'll be something that is hopefully self-regulating to the largest extent it can be. Right. You know,
oh yeah, exactly. It's always the beginning of something. Like it's almost like when you start a project, and let's say you screw up an airdrop or you screw up your tokenomics, those things sort of haunt you. So I definitely agree. In the future, when we have a trusted group of jurors and the ecosystem self-regulating, I'm not worried about that. But it's always like the beginning of it. How do we ensure we maintain fairness and balance so this way it can thrive and be successful?
There'll also be a dispute resolution protocol as part of this, right? That'll have implications for people's tokens and implications for their scores on this platform. It won't be possible just to like, you know, now you just scam somebody by, you know, some simplistic means. You know, we're gonna make it as secure and thoughtful as we can, right? While still being like not being like overly cumbersome to use or understand.
And that's something I definitely like, that we considered adding the whole dispute stuff. This way, once a prediction is sort of over, this gives the community and even us to sort of go and verify the results, see how things are. If things aren't what they're supposed to be, we can open up a dispute and have a chance to reverse, what happened, but also punish the people who potentially, put incorrect information or something that led to this.
Right. Like somebody opens a dispute, then they'll have to bond some amount, perhaps. And then that amount, if it's proven that, and then people will vote on whether the dispute is valid. And if it's decided that the disputer has a valid dispute, I guess they will, they'll need to receive some profit for that. So we're going to think about how, they'll be rewarded for that. But on the other side, what's more clear in my mind at this point is just the idea of taking the money of the disputer, if it's an invalid dispute, and like you say, maybe split it, half goes to the House and half goes to the people who voted on the,
I guess I love that we're going to find a way to reward people who are like disputing action. Mm-hmm. But the Brooklyn in me is saying, fuck that, because now we're basically giving people money to snitch. Be like, hey, someone did something incorrectly. And if you're a snitch, you can go dispute it. And if you're correct, now you're getting some reward from it. So typically in real life, snitching shouldn't, equal reward. But in this case, if you do snitch and you're right, you will get some type of reward.
Right. It's not, because it's not snitching. Oh, no, it's not, it's like correcting, right? If it's clear that, outcome A happened and somebody votes B, even though it's plain as day that it's untrue, that it's not exactly snitching. It's just making a correct.
See, now I know Daniel would be the perfect cop. He's talking to a suspect like, look, bro, it's not snitching. You're just like doing this thing right here.
So, snitching means there's some kind of, something private, something secret being disclosed.
Hey, man, transparency all the way. What's going on here, Garisby? What's going on here, man?
No, I'm saying in this case, I'm for snitching. I think snitching is great. But before we get too deep into talking about my hood background, was there anything else part of prediction market you wanted to dive into or share, Daniel? I know
some modules to this, some other functionality that will exist, though primitive in its initial release, is functionality related to collect, keeping track of, I guess, what you call evidence or research that to back up a claim, a link or a statement, an image, some article, and some discovery in the whole, courtroom lingo. So there'll be a process of kind of presenting that, referring to it in votes if it's necessary, or maybe someone wants to go the extra mile and point to something specifically to justify the way they're voting, ways to endorse the research and say upvote or downvote something as being legitimate. So, that's going to be built in there too. And that's going to be part of the on-chain, data and application. So that's going to be cool, just to add some kind of more thoughtfulness to this.
I don't know the full approach of doing this, but I like the idea there's a way to include evidence, when you're making a decision. Right. But it would also be nice for some way to reward people to go through the information and sort of, score it on how good the potential evidence is. Like, for example, if someone's including shit research or a random link to their supposed research, that shouldn't count, for, hey, so they're doing good. But
So that's what I meant by having some system of endorsement. Right. So, we can score people on how much, not only how much evidence that they've presented in cases in the past, but only, what evidence that they have presented, has been endorsed. So to what degree is their contribution valued? Research papers have some measurement of how many times they've been cited, right? And that's used as a measurement of how good they are in some sense. So.
Oh, I definitely like that endorsement idea. I'm almost even envisioning, if we have new people on the platform that are trying to build their social score up, so they can be a part of the prediction market. Maybe this could be a great opportunity for them to review the evidence, endorse it, and if you have a good track record of endorsing, good evidence, right? All that can play into now your own score is also going up too.
And
So you're gonna have jurors of the jurors?
Basically.
It's called, yes, self-juror. It's very common. But I'm just kidding. But you know, this is kind of like tangential, but I definitely want for each of our prediction markets, you know, for someone's voting on the outcome of something, it'd be nice to have like a real time chat going on the side as well. You know, just like a little thread going on. I think because it would be nice to have that in issues or in markets that are more contentious or have a lot of like activity going on, kind of like you would have on TradingView, where people are like chatting on the side, maybe about a stock or something. I guess I should say that from the user experience perspective, using this thing will feel kind of like similar to kind of like an exchange where you see maybe a graph and you see different positions in an order book, perhaps. But we're not going to use the kind of traditional terms that you might expect in a traditional like financial market. It'll be like a hybrid. So I'm saying that because I don't think that the traditional financial market terminology is, as we were discussing earlier, very intuitive to an outsider who just wants to come and just use something immediately. So I think we have a plan, you know, we have something up our sleeve in regards to how to make this thing like feel more like a game, in the sense that when you're like a straightforward game, not a complicated game or something like that, you know, Tetris, you see the things fall and you put them into lines. It should be pretty.
I love that we're always trying to apply game theory to everything, but you know, before we talk about our proposal to make Stargaze permissionless, just want to do a quick TLDR for the new people that's tuned in. Essentially, Archway is giving us a grant to build a prediction market powered by human oracles, and this is going to be the next major project we tackle. Right now, we're wrapping up Sports Square. We're wrapping up Interchain Lottery, which is integrating with Yieldmos, so you'll be able to stake, you know, a certain amount to your validator, but also to buy automatic lottery tickets to a rollover lottery, like typical, you know, lotteries that you see within the United States and other places. And we're going to start with Juno first. Once we have that, we're going to expand it to other major chains, you know, the Hub, Archway, and so forth. This way, you know, if you want to, you know, degen some of your validator rewards on lottery tickets and potentially win huge, now you can automatically do that. And after that, we plan to add it to Restake. But essentially, we're wrapping all that work up. We're going to tackle the prediction market. And then after the prediction market, we're looking to build out a fun horse racing game on Stargaze, which we'll talk about later. But Daniel, was there anything else I missed about the prediction market or anything else before we dive into making Stargaze permissionless?
Yes. But you can...
For now, yeah. Daniel, for now.
So you can, yeah, continue.
All right, cool. I guess we'll just talk about that. So a few weeks ago, you know, we made an announcement that we were looking to make Stargaze permissionless, and I'm happy to say that, you know, the prop is finally on Commonwealth. So for some background, Stargaze is currently permissionless for NFTs, but not smart contracts. And if you look at, you know, Stargaze and why it's the premier NFT hub in Cosmos, it's because they created a really amazing environment where people can come experiment, try stuff, potentially innovate. And this has led to a lot of amazing, you know, things like Bad Kids, Women from Cosmos, Pixel Wizard. There's a cool coin flip game. You know, we're also building there. You know, a lot of times when you're experimenting and doing things, you're not sure what is going to be that thing that people fall in love with. And that's why it's so important to have this open, accessible environment where people can do stuff. And beyond that, the Stargaze team has also done an incredible job building amazing tooling to allow people who don't have any Web3 experience or deploying smart contract, we have to easily deploy their NFT contract. And because of all these things, I think that's one of the major reasons why Stargaze is the NFT hub in this ecosystem. Other chains are trying it, but no one comes close to it. So we want to take the same exact philosophy where there really is no barrier to entry. It's relatively easy. The things that make Stargaze successful, we want to apply that to the smart contracts. And a big reason for doing that, yes, people could argue there's other permissionless chain like Juno, Archway. Why don't you just go build your smart contracts there? The issue with that is all of the best NFTs in Cosmos literally live in Stargaze. So if you can build amazing applications, imagine stuff like fractional NFTs, now you can directly use those assets without having to go to IBC, making it slower, and other, you know, potential complications. And beyond that, yeah, governance in Cosmos is still not a very accessible thing. So for example, on Stargaze, it costs about 50,000 stars or about $450 US to be able to open up a proposal. You know, so if you live in a first world country, you know, maybe you might say, hey, that's not a lot of money, but that still is a lot of money for Americans, Europeans. But now if you're talking about Bangladesh and India and other places where, you know, they don't make a lot, that's a shit ton of money, you know, and that's not really accessible. And if you want to like make any changes to your smart contract, unless you've been whitelisted, do a governance proposal, you have to open up another governance proposal to go and update and fix your code. So when you think about all these different things, it's not really a very accessible platform, right? And beyond that, if Stargaze is only meant to be just an NFT marketplace, then the Stars token is essentially worthless, right? This is the reason why the token's not doing very well. It's only for NFTs. Whenever creators sell a collection, you're mostly dumping it. But if you open up this platform to allow people to build cool, interesting things, whether it's games, whether it's an NFT lending and borrowing platform, all those things should generate more volume and user activity on the chain, leading to Stars actually being used, you know, more, hopefully leading to that value going up. So in our proposal on Commonwealth, if people are curious, we outlined a lot of reasons of why we think should happen. I believe Shane, maybe 2-3 months ago, he actually did a Twitter poll to see if Stargaze should be permissionless. And it seems like it was, the community was very split on this. It was literally almost 50-50. People arguing that it shouldn't, other people arguing it should. So I'm not sure where this is going to go. It definitely does feel like the right approach, you know, making things more open and accessible, leading to hopefully greater value being created. But we'll see. No comments in the thread yet or the post, but hopefully soon we'll start seeing, you know, people's concerns if there are any, and try to address it, because I do think this is going to be a really big step in like Stargaze and Stars token future if we can open up, you know, ecosystem more.
Yeah. You know, not only making games on it, but without going into details, if we, you know, when we get into the fractionalized NFT marketplace, doing it there makes sense. Having a house, you know, staking as a house contract on Arch, or not Arch, Stargaze would make sense too, right? And that those things all, like you said, they give some of the utility to the Stars token. And, you know, they have a great team, and, you know, they're both like at a, they're great people. You know, we've had a lot of interaction with them here in New York, and very generous and receptive people. And they like clearly want to, they're open to ideas, and they want to collaborate, and, you know, they just want Stargaze to succeed to the maximum extent. And a lot of the artists too are on Stargaze. They have the ones that are in New York, you know, we've met them too. It's just like, and they're part of the community as well. It's just, if we can make, and since, you know, if we can make Stargaze succeed, you know, I think everything will, you know, succeed a little bit more in Cosmos. So
yeah, exactly. And the two other big concerns I just wanted to call out as well too, is one of the things someone mentioned was like competition, right? Hey, what if someone else comes in, builds out an NFT platform, takes away market share from the Stargaze platform? Why is that a bad thing, right? If there's competition being created, if someone's making something that makes users go more to this way versus the Stargaze hub, I think that's great, because competition really pushes teams to do better and do more. I remember when we first started in this space, like we looked at Raccoon as our competition. You know, now I think we're more friendly. We try to help each other where we can. But then that competition really drove us to work faster, try to do things, you know, different and crazy ways. I think it's a healthy thing to have competition. So to make an argument that, hey, this might, you know, hurt Stargaze, like why? Why right. does it matter? Like for me, I'm not pro Stargaze. I have a big bag of stars. You know, if something's going to build a better NFT platform or an NFT platform that's going to drive Stargaze team to do better things and more, that's only going to benefit me. So it's like a win-win situation.
And there's really so much you can do. You know, if it's an NFT focused chain, and now all of a sudden we have permissionless Cosmosm you know, smart contracts executing on it. We can implement, you know, all new kinds of NFT smart contracts. The NFTs are a smart contract, right? And currently what's going on is they've whitelisted a particular kind of smart contract, the NFT smart contract, to be, you know, executed and created. So what you're talking about is just like opening it up to any kind of smart contract that might want to be deployed there. But once we do that, you know, I was talking with Rizvi earlier about this. It's you know, the NFTs, basically there's an interface that's defined on the smart contract, like a bunch of, like the way that it communicates with the outside world, its interface. And so long as your smart contract implements that interface, it looks like an NFT. It looks like a normal NFT contract, you know, so which can show up on an NFT marketplace, right? Because it has that interface that's expected. But under the hood, you can do anything. So that means that, like, the world of creating NFTs that have dynamic data, dynamic attributes, dynamic imagery, dynamic things that we haven't even really thought of yet, they can all be done in, you know, as smart contracts. And it's just kind of just opens the door to further innovation on what an NFT is and what it's capable of and what it represents. If you have now just arbitrary smart contracts that can, you know, self-identify as an NFT. So
I won't say who, but when we first initially talked about this idea of making Stargaze, you know, permissionless for smart contracts, one of the things that came up is, oh, I haven't seen any app that people are working on that's worth even considering. And that's a problem with innovation. Not really a problem, but when you're building something that people want to use, even if you're not innovating, building something cool, sometimes you don't know what you're going to build that people will really take a liking to, right? So think about the next, like, friend tech or some major app that people want to use. It's hard to predict that stuff and which team is going to make it possible. One of the best things that you can see across Web 1, Web 2, and even some parts of Web 3 is by creating the environment where a developer and someone can come in, try stuff, experiment, and if they're doing stuff that people are enjoying, maybe they do more of it. And that's kind of hopefully the perfect recipe to get these types of cool apps and things that people want to come to your chain for, want to, you know, buy stars for. And that's kind of what we're advocating for, is creating that environment so people can come and do stuff. There are some security concerns, like, hey, what if someone deploys a bad contract and halts the chain or impacts user funds? It kind of sucks, but I say that's a good thing. Like, why the fuck would you want to use a blockchain where potentially there's vulnerabilities, there are bad things that could happen? In the real world, the way things happen is something bad happens, you learn from it, and you use that to strengthen your networking protocol. So by making Stargaze, you know, permissionless, if something bad happens, yes, in the short term, it will suck. But in the long term, it's going to make it better than what it is today. Yeah. And right now, it's a bear market. There's not a lot of activity, not a lot of normal users using Stargaze. So envision a world where you have thousands of developers building applications for Stargaze. You have millions of normal users. You want to make sure your chain is as resilient and secure as possible. And the way you do that, let people build shit, see what breaks. And when it does break, make it better. And this way, other Cosmos chains can also take advantage of whatever fixes were put in.
I think it definitely has implications on what kind of people are enabled to build on your platform. Because if you're a permissioned chain, it's a lot more difficult to fix something that, you know, fix a bug or to update something, because you have to go through a whole other vote to allow that update to be applied. And it's difficult for that reason to kind of, you know, they'll say, oh, you can just develop and test things on testnet. That's only like, that's not really fully true. You know, it's
almost like you're testing functionality, but a lot of times you want to put a product in the hands of the users, mm-hmm. ASAP, and get their direct feedback. Maybe the assumptions you're making about what's important to build out first, maybe you're totally wrong. And your users will come and tell you, no, this is the way you should build. Maybe a certain bug or something that seems off to you in the hands of real users, they might say, oh, no, this actually is what I want, is better. Yeah. And that's why it's so important to get products out there ASAP, even if they're small MVPs, just so you could test something. And that's why I also hate this idea of, hey, just go build on Funk. There's no one on testnet. if I want to just check simple interactions, sure, I can test that. Yeah. But to me, that's not what I really care about. I want to know if our product is what people want, if they want to use it, what recommendations they have.
I don't know why it's like this dichotomy between either permissioned or permissionless. It's like, I'm probably not aware of all the things that you can do, but it would be nice if there was more granularity. Like you could have a proposition to allow a specific account to deploy new smart contracts, right? Like the admin account of Gelato if it got whitelisted or something. So,
and the thing is, you can do that, but the issue with that is you have to sort of know how all that works. Even now, working with governance for a while, there was like a front end that you can use to deploy, proposals. But I think like a few weeks ago when I checked, their front end was down. So even for like the Osmosis prop we opened to make GLTO verified, I had to download the CLI and sort of figure out how to do it, all from there. And that's not a very accessible thing. I'm kind of envisioning a world where a random nerd finds a documentation for Stargate, like, oh, there's a bunch of cool NFTs there. Oh, there's a cool Godzilla NFT. Maybe I'll build a quick smart contract / front end that does some type of quick game, right? That's not really possible now because now you got to learn about governance. Exactly. Now you also have to get $500 and just too much barriers.
Exactly. So who's going to come and work on those chains? It's going to be people who have the existing teams and funding to build things in a way, that has done all of the rigorous testing, the unit testing, integration testing. Maybe they get audits, not everyone has those resources. Like a lot of people are trying to get something started, from scratch, in their after work or in their off time or something, or among their friends, like we are, right? It's like those people are not so much enabled to, empowered to develop on chains that are permissioned for that reason. At least, again, like you said, they can test the functionality, but they can't really do anything to see if their functionality gains any traction. And that's what's important. That's the only real, significant indicator, in my opinion, about whether, you're headed in the right direction with something. Like, if more than zero people use it, it means that there might be something to it, I would say for the best.
I always think about us sort of joining this ecosystem. Like, from the outside, I was an investor of Cosmos. I got you into it. You were doing Solana stuff before. I got other friends into it. We built up this big community. I keep thinking about what if we never joined this ecosystem? What would this ecosystem be lacking? But at the same time, what if this was open to more people like us so we can bring fresher ideas? Like, we don't have any attachments to the old waves or the Cosmos cartel or any of that. We're just coming in. We're just normal developers and people trying to build a business. And I want to see more of those normal people here. And I think to make that happen, we definitely have to remove the barrier of entry as much as we can. And if the Stargaze team wants to come out and say, hey, we don't want competition, this chain is made just so we could thrive our NFT marketplace or whatever, then let them say that. Then using that information, voters should make up their mind. But having people already say, hey, this might hurt competition, like stuff like that is nonsense, Like $500 to open up a government proposal is a lot of money for a lot of people out there. And I just hate that if you're in this space long enough, you sort of get trapped in a, some type of thing where you just assume everyone knows what you do, that hey, this thing that you do is just relatively easy, and it's not. This shit is like hard and complicated sometimes.
Dude, that's a lot of money for the people in here. What are you talking about out there?
I know. I mean, that's like I'm gonna run out of rent money soon. So
so apparently dinner is just done and we've been talking for like an hour and 45. So we could definitely keep talking about it more, but I think maybe as we get closer to getting more feedback and we see what people are saying, we'll definitely have to do another dedicated space just around making Stargaze permissionless. Maybe I'm hoping we could really pitch to people who aren't considering the things that we're considering, but why they should make this change happen and why it's going to be beneficial. So beyond all the things we talked about, Sportsware, prediction market, making Stargaze permissionless, anything else, Daniel or Dave, that you feel like we missed or we want to cover before we call it?
I guess just keep an eye out. If you miss the sports NFTs or the NFL NFT, you miss the Fantasy League, here's your last chance to get in on the football squares. There's going to be, we're going to make that announcement. So just, again, your last chance to get in and part of all the action that's going on. And there's a lot of action going on in there, right, Riz?
Dude, I can't believe football has actually been, this is like the first year where I'm watching most of the games. I'm actually watching people on YouTube, like doing weekly recaps. I'm following the injury line. It's like, I never thought I would love all this stuff. Like growing up, I was like, why the fuck are people so crazy about sports? But now I feel like I finally get it. You know, once you can gamble, it makes anything fun.
And with that.
Yeah. Anything from you, Daniel, you want to say before we call it here?
No, I think I'm good. I think,
I was almost expecting you to say something creepy in Latin or something, and they would call it.
Creepy in Latin, what do you think? All I know is a bunch of religious stuff that got stuck in my brain when I was a kid.
That's perfect, man. That's exactly what we need in terms of creepy. But with that, I definitely want to thank everyone who's tuned in live to listen. Dave, thank you so much for turning all of our Twitter spaces into podcasts. To everyone who listens to this as a podcast, you know, keep following us. You know, we were on a journey to build a 100-year-old company, you know, the next big, you know, gaming software Web3 company. And I think we have a good chance at that. The way our strategies, the things that we're doing, we just got to keep building and we'll keep doing that.
Ourselves and others, you know, like I still want to go out there and, you know, get the like engines going in other people and work with them to build things in ways that are, you know, interoperable. You know, give them the smart contracts we have, they can use them or not, but just do things in a way where you have different teams forming, but they're kind of, they talk to each other and they build things in ways that are modular and they can build upon each other's work and so on. It's like, I really want to do, once I have some more like bandwidth, you know, and I can just, or at least even now, you know, in some limited capacity, I still want to go out there and try to like see some creativity in people's minds, and some like maybe undergrads who want to get into, they want to get into web development. Instead of giving them some kind of Python web framework, we'll give them COS and WASM and show them how to deploy a smart contract, right? So, anyway, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, you know, as you say all these things, I just keep thinking how grateful I feel that we actually have an audience, we actually have a community. It's so easy to build random stuff on the side and have no feedback. You know, shit ton of people face that, but to have something where people tune in, people give you a chance, people want to hear you out, people invest in the ideas. Like, to me, I honestly feel like I'm living the dream. You know, this is something we wanted for a really long time. And this is one of the reasons why we don't ever take for granted our community and people who have given us their stuff. Every day we wake up and we want to do great stuff for Gelato because you guys all enable us to do so. It's kind of hard to do stuff when people don't care about it. But with that, before we talk about any other sappy stuff, thank you for everyone who joined in. I hope everyone has a great night or day, and we'll catch you at the next space.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Eats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. unlimited, got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy, before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality, stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Terror Spaces.